In the last few years, universities in South Africa have been the site of sometimes quite violent protests, and invariably the issues orbit around race. A movement which began at the nation's poshest and most liberal university, Cape Town, has spread right across the country and also to the UK. And as I said earlier, there are echoes in the US. It calls for changes to the faculty, to the curriculum, to accommodation for black students, to fees, even to the very artwork dangling on the walls of campus buildings. Now, last year, students united around a movement called Rhodes Must Fall, a reference to the statue of Cecil, which used to stand on Cape Town's campus. And after a series of protests, the Rhodes statue wobbled and was toppled. The students have now targeted statues of other historical figures, or historic figures, the Odd King and Paul Kruger, for example. But behind the targeting of symbols are much more serious issues. The agonisingly slow pace of change for so many blacks in South Africa. In the 22 years since apartheid was dismantled, economic inequality remains firmly in place. Now, that's also, it seems, reflected in the makeup of universities. At Cape Town, just 5% of the faculty and only a quarter of the student population is black. This in a country with an 80% black population. My guest, Professor Penny Andrews, went to university at a time when mixed-race students like her had to get special permission from a minister to attend. In spite of that, she's had a formidable career, and she's now Dean of Cape Town University's School of Law. And three cheers, she's here this week to talk about the transformation of South Africa's universities at the University of New South Wales Human Rights Centre. Blessings upon them. Penny, a very warm welcome.
Thank you to
the studio. You went to Natal University in Durban during the apartheid era. It must have been pretty tough for a mixed-race student then.
Well, it wasn't tough to the extent that it was a liberal white institution. I got permission, as you point out, from the Minister of Coloured Affairs to attend the university. Now, I say it wasn't tough because the University of Natal at that time was a hotbed of political activity. And it was also the home where the university that Steve Biko attended. He wasn't there by the time I got there. But so there was a lot of political activity, and it was tough in South Africa, but it was very exciting to be on campus, and that's when I really became very, very politically active.
So you were involved in all sorts of campus protests.
Yes, yes.
Name two.
Well, you know, the Black Consciousness Movement was very, very strong on the University of Natal campus. And then in 1980, when I was a student, a whole country, high school students, stopped, and they wanted changes to education, specifically not to have to learn Afrikaans in schools and so on. So the whole fight was against the apartheid government.
Now, the current protests, are they simply echoes of the old ones, or are these new protests?
They're both echoes and new. I think the echoes relate to the point that you raised earlier about the slow pace of change in South Africa and the fact that economic inequalities have deepened since the end of apartheid, and that there's still a correlation between race and affluence. So, in largely, black people will remain poor and whites are still in the middle class and affluent, although they're now black people who also have become affluent. But the fault lines are still very much racial.
Isn't it getting much more expensive to attend a university in South Africa?
Oh.
And doesn't that preclude more black students getting in?
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, what has happened is as government subsidies for universities have shrunk, the universities have in the last decade or so just increased their fees, which has meant that it's become very expensive for students and, in fact, prohibitive, and many have not been able to attend. So, yes, the right of access to education, which is in the Constitution, is really being curbed by these very high fees.
Let's look at the three main issues. There's the outsourcing of work and the issue of accommodation. Let's look at those two now.
Okay, so the outsourcing of work, the students last year connected Roads Must Fall and Fees Must Fall with outsourcing. The university began to outsource workers about 15 years ago. It was an economic decision. But of course, when you outsource workers, then those workers don't have, their children don't have rights to fees in school, in the universities. They don't have benefits and so on. So the outsourcing, that was an issue for the students. And they won because the University of Cape Town and many other universities have now decided to insource their work, which is creating all kinds of obviously economic problems. And I think we have at the University of Cape Town and at other universities, we're facing quite a deficit. Last week, somebody looked at what it cost the universities, the protests, and they worked out that it cost about 300 million rand, which the universities and the state has to cough up.
Okay, accommodation.
You mean housing accommodation?
Yeah, apparently yes. The poorer students can't afford to live off campus, but there's a great shortage of accommodation on campus.
Yes, there is a great shortage. And in fact, one of the things that has happened is that students who are on financial aid, really the idea is to have them live on campus and with affordable housing. But at Cape Town, what happened this year was not ill intent on the part of the university, but really neglect and poor planning, that more students accepted, the yield was greater. So they were quite surprised when the students arrived and there were not enough rooms on campus for students. And that created a huge problem. They have, after many weeks, they've been able to house everybody on campus and also off-campus housing. But it's an issue that the University of Cape Town has been struggling with and other universities as well.
Okay, let's also look at some of the smaller issues, including the teaching languages.
Yes, well, you know, as you know, South Africa has 11 official languages, and the language policy really is about trying to include more indigenous languages. And so many universities, my alma mater in Natal, have already introduced Zulu as well as English as a part of the students have to learn both languages. Well, they learn English, but they also have to learn Zulu. At University of Cape Town, they're developing a language policy now to allow people to study English, an indigenous language, Xhosa and Afrikaans. And they're also offering another language, Sotho. But the idea is that you cannot... English is the lingua franca of business, of commerce, and so on. So that is the medium of instruction in the country. But if students can learn another language, it will clearly assist them to be better lawyers, for example, if they're law graduates, engineers, scientists, and so on. So there definitely is a move to change the language policy to include the teaching of indigenous languages.
I'm talking to Penelope Andrews, who's the boss, the Dean of Law at Cape Town University. Was your appointment seen as a major breakthrough, or did it pass almost without comment?
Well, you know, I'm the first black dean at the University of Cape Town, which I think, you know, after 20 years, 22 years of constitutional democracy, I think it is a statement. But it was not, I think it was controversial only in that I'd lived outside South Africa for 30 years almost, and now I was coming back. But it's been controversial, good, not bad. And I think the University of Cape Town is really committed. Everybody seems to have a commitment to transformation. So that's been very positive for me coming back.
Penelope, knowing you were coming on tonight, I got into the spirit by going up into the middle of Sydney and pushing over a statue of Queen Victoria. Now, it wasn't easy. She's a big, strong girl, which brings us to Cecil.
Yes.
Now, tell us about the argument around Cecil.
Well, the argument from what I gathered, because I was in New York last year, I only arrived, you know, to take the deanship from the 1st of January. But the argument is that Cecil John Rhodes is the most extreme manifestation of British imperialism and white imperialism. And a group of students decided
Well, they got rid of him in Rhodesia, didn't they?
They did. They didn't, though. The statue, there's still the Rhodes statue on Table Mountain. And there's the Rhodes Mandela place right in downtown Cape Town. So to some extent, of course, Cecil John Rhodes, the statue is a symbolic manifestation, but it just sort of signifies the contradictions in South Africa that Nelson Mandela lent his name to Cecil John Rhodes's, you know, the scholarships. And if you go past Parliament in South Africa...
But that's, in a sense, typically Mandelian, isn't it? He was such a good tactician.
Yes, yes. But I think that the University of Cape Town was surprised at the level of support when this happened, when this started, and there was just this groundswell of support. And I think really what it was even though it was symbolic, it represented the frustration that many felt about not just higher education, but socioeconomic conditions in South Africa.
But it did divide opinion on campus, didn't it? Not everyone thought it was the best idea.
No, no. And in fact, you know, I think that it happened so rapidly. And if they hadn't toppled the statue, there would have been occasion for lots more debate and dialogue around it. But it happened very, very quickly. And opinion was divided, but the statue now sits in a place in off campus. Sort of statue graveyard.
I sometimes think of all the hundreds and thousands of statues of Lenin and Stalin that must be in some great rusting theme park in the back blocks of what used to be the Soviet. Now, the student protests that we're talking about have their echoes in the UK and the US, where the Black Lives Matter movement has highlighted racism on campus. But some argue that it's also turned into a movement to limit free speech, speech that others might find offensive or insensitive. Do you give that argument any credence?
I think it's a very complicated argument. There's, in the United States and in other places, there's developed this notion of safe spaces, that students need to have safe spaces within which they can converse, in which they can dialogue. My problem is that universities should be actually dangerous places for ideas, and you need a place in which difference and controversy can surface so that people can learn and people can grow. So, yes, I've come across it, and I do understand that there's certain kinds of speech that maybe ought not to be aired. You know, nobody's going to praise Hitler. But then there's a range of issues upon which people will disagree. And I think universities are the perfect place to disagree.
Don't say that nobody is going to take that view on Hitler. I think that could happen at any moment. And I think so does Angela Merkel. But some of the protesters don't want to go much further than topple Cecil. They've burnt some of the artwork hanging on campus walls, and they want the rest removed. What's going on there?
Yeah, that was I think that was just a terrible, terrible set of acts where they came and they took the paintings off walls and just burnt them. And that's been widely condemned. My faculty, we put out a very strong statement. And I think that was an act of vandalism. That's all that it was. The struggle of South Africans, black South Africans, was not furthered by burning the paintings. Students have been arrested, they've been charged, some students have been suspended. And I think that was actually a moment in which many students who previously might have supported the protests around fees must fall and so on. I think that lost a large proportion of students.
How big a university is Cape Town?
Cape Town is a large university. The student population, I looked at the number, but I think it's something like 32,000 students.
So it's substantial.
It's a substantial university.
And the percentage who are black?
Depends on the faculty. In the law faculty, 62% of students are black. So, you know,
some faculties... So you are a subversive element, aren't you?
Subversive?
All those black students. You're a very naughty dean, but in some others...
In some faculties, your statistic about 25% black is not actually correct. I think you would say black Africans, but in South Africa, black is used broadly to include colored and Indian. So I think the population of black students at the University of Cape Town is probably more like 60%, but black Africans certainly.
Many people listening to our conversation tonight would have been shocked to hear that 22 years after apartheid was officially dismantled, the disparity between the wealthy and the poor is deeper than ever. How long will it take?
Yeah, there are two things. The first is that it's so shocking in South Africa because Nelson Mandela and the sort of, you know, the Rainbow Nation and all the promises and the Great Constitution promised something and it didn't happen. But I think what's happening in South Africa is a global phenomenon. In the United States, the inequalities have been entrenched. I think the UK, Europe, I don't know enough about Australia, but my sense is that
everyone in Australia is rich.
Oh, okay. All right. Then it's not in Australia. But I think that the sort of the way that the world economic system is now put in place, there's a much greater chance of economic inequalities actually growing than shrinking. We know about the 1%. And so I think that South Africa, the problem is South Africa opened up, and once it was part of the global economic system, the chances of economic equity become less. But government policy can make a difference. And I think South Africa, the ANC government, certainly the last two administrations, the Zuma administration particularly, has really failed South Africans in that respect.
The process you're here to talk about, transformation, refers to giving blacks equal representation after apartheid. But as you're pointing out, it's thus far only benefited a small elite class. There must be a huge amount of anger boiling up in the country outside the universities.
Oh, absolutely. And in fact, in South Africa, the student protests came after a decade of thousands and thousands of protests in South Africa, in townships, in local communities and so on, around service delivery, about schools, about access to a whole bunch of facilities and so on, about corruption, trade unions. We know about the Marikana massacre. There's just this, in South Africa in the last decade, there's been a lot of protest. And it all has to do, as I pointed out, with the failure of governance.
A privilege to talk to you, Penny. Thank you very much. And I know that despite everything, you still have optimism for the future of your country.
Oh, I'm very optimistic. Thank you.
Professor Penny Andrews, Dean of Cape Town University's School of Law. And Penny will speak about, yes, transformation at the University of New South Wales Human Rights Centre. This is a little wireless program called LNL. And coming up, the Philippine elections.